Chapter 25 A Fire-Breathing Giant. Mohenjo-Daro, Pakistan, 1947. A small group of young archaeologists and students gathered in front of a confusion of mud bricks and sand high above the ancient city, on the banks of the Indus River. Silence fell as an upright, middle-aged archaeologist with a bristling mustache strode up to them. Mortimer Wheeler was a formidable man, and the students were terrified of him. With few words but commanding gestures, he set them to supervising teams of local laborers who attacked the sand. A few weathered bricks became many. The stark walls of a huge platform emerged from the hillside. "A fort," he announced in a loud voice. "It towers grim and forbidding above the plain." The archaeologists and students nodded their heads timidly in agreement. The bold announcement was typical of an archaeologist once described by a disgruntled colleague as a fire-breathing giant. Many early archaeologists had strong personalities. They had to have, as they often worked almost alone and often in remote lands. Many of their digs were on a large scale, using small armies of laborers. Mortimer Wheeler was a born leader, but those skills were developed while he was an artillery officer in the First World War. At Mohenjo-Daro, he directed an excavation that trained young Indian archaeologists in his rigorous methods. Wheeler managed them with a firm hand and left no one in any doubt about who was boss. If he told his students that a mass of bricks was a fort, it was a fort. There was no argument. The fire-breathing giant was not the first archaeologist to work at Mohenjo-Daro. Archaeology was new to India, where written history began with Alexander the Great's invasion in 326 BC. The first professional archaeologist to dig there was an Englishman, John Marshall, who became Director General of India's newly founded Archaeological Survey in 1921. Marshall moved into Mohenjo-Daro in strength. During the 1925-26 field season, he used a workforce of 1,200. He also trained young Indian archaeologists in excavation. The digs uncovered entire blocks of brick houses, networks of streets, and elaborate drainage systems. A huge stone-lined water tank that served as a ceremonial bath came to light among buildings high above the city. When archaeologists working in Mesopotamia found artifacts identical to those from Mohenjo-Daro that dated to the 3rd millennium BC, the period between 3000 and 2000 BC, Marshall had a rough chronology to work with. His report on Mohenjo-Daro and the Indus civilization was the standard reference work on the subject, until Mortimer Wheeler came along. Robert Eric Mortimer Wheeler, 1890-1976, burst onto Indian archaeology like a thunderclap, becoming director of the Archaeological Survey in 1944. He inherited a dying institution, but the decisive and flamboyant Wheeler was the ideal man to breathe new life into it. The son of a journalist, he was born in Edinburgh. He studied classics at University College London. After graduating, he went to Germany's Rhineland to research Roman pottery. His artillery experience during the First World War convinced him that he had a gift for logistics and organization, essential qualities in an excavator. In 1920, Wheeler became keeper of archaeology at the National Museum of Wales in Cardiff, and then, 4 years later, its director. While in Wales, Wheeler and his wife Tessa undertook a series of major excavations of Roman frontier forts. They had studied the almost forgotten excavation methods of General Pitt Rivers, see Chapter 16. Like him, they paid careful attention to even shallow layers in the soil, recovered the smallest of artifacts, and published their work promptly. Wheeler's fine drawings served as illustrations. Nothing like this had been seen before in Roman archaeology. Wheeler went even further. Convinced that the public had the right to know about his work, he encouraged visitors to the site and gave numerous popular lectures. Prehistoric and Roman Wales, published in 1925, The same year as Gordon Childe's Dawn of European Civilization, see Chapter 23, established Wheeler's reputation. He turned down a professorship at Edinburgh, which Gordon Childe subsequently accepted, and in 1926 became keeper of the neglected London Museum. With his boundless energy, Wheeler rapidly transformed the place. Meanwhile, he and Tessa excavated more sites, carefully chosen to study the relationship between native British people and the Roman settlers. He also trained a new generation of young archaeologists on his hectic excavations. In 1928 and 1929, Wheeler excavated a Roman sanctuary at Lydney, Gloucestershire. Then he turned his attention to the Roman city of Verulamium, just north of London, in open country, where large-scale excavation was possible. Between 1930 and 1933, he and Tessa exposed nearly 4.5 hectares of the city. They unraveled the complicated history of its earthworks and of earlier settlements. Still full of energy, having set the London Museum in order, he went on to found the London Institute of Archaeology in 1937, becoming its first director. Under his leadership, the Institute became famous both for its fieldwork and for its excellent training in excavation and scientific methods, such as pottery analysis. Tired of the Romans, the Wheelers undertook their most ambitious British excavation. The huge 2,000-year-old Maiden Castle Hill Fort in southern England, with its massive earthworks. From 1934 to 1937, the husband and wife team dissected the complex fortifications with deep vertical trenches. They also investigated parts of the interior with shallow trenches laid out in a series of boxes. Such a horizontal layout enabled them to trace different layers over a wide area. With the trenches carefully labeled and recorded, stratigraphy allowed them to build a chronology of the site from one side to the other. The Maiden Castle excavations achieved a level of sophistication that was unheard of at the time. Wheeler actively encouraged visitors and wrote vivid accounts of the site. His most famous tale describes a Roman attack on the fort in AD 43, with survivors creeping back in the night to bury their dead, whom Wheeler had found in his trenches. This is Wheeler at his most enjoyable and flamboyant best. Wheeler was a formidable personality, with flashing eyes and flowing hair. He disliked criticism and did not suffer fools gladly. He drove both his paid workers and his volunteers hard and cared little for their feelings. He made enemies with his abrupt ways and his ambition, as well as his love of publicity. But with their disciplined planning and carefully laid out trenches, dug to get information, not goodies, he and Tessa brought British excavation into the modern world. The outbreak of the Second World War found Wheeler back in the Royal Artillery. He fought at the Battle of El Alamein in North Africa, distinguishing himself under fire. Then, out of the blue, in 1944, the Viceroy of India invited him to become Director General of the Archaeological Survey of India. Wheeler shook up that lazy organization almost overnight. In a rigorous 6-month training program at Takshashila, 61 students learned a standard of excavation previously unheard of in India. Wheeler's first Indian excavation was at Erakamadu, a training station on the southeast coast. He found Roman pot fragments, which showed that Roman goods had been traded as far afield as there. But his greatest challenge came at Harappa and Mohenjo-Daro. Wheeler had excavated towns and forts before, but he had never tackled sites as large and complex as these two ancient cities. For 5 years, his trained staffers joined him in probing the two sites. Wheeler divided Mohenjo-Daro into two sections, the higher buildings, the citadel, on the west side, and the predominantly residential lower town. His excavators uncovered a grid layout of narrow streets lined with brick dwellings. These ran from north to south and from east to west. Covered drains linked the streets and alleyways. The sophistication of the drainage and sewage systems was unparalleled in the ancient world. Both Wheeler and Stuart Pigott, another very competent British archaeologist who also spent part of the war in India, were struck by the technological achievements of what appeared to have been a modest civilization. There were no godlike rulers boasting of their conquests on palace and temple walls, as was the case in Egypt and Mesopotamia. When Wheeler excavated the Mohenjo-Daro and the Harappa citadels, he interpreted the structures on top as public buildings. One jumble of bricks he proclaimed to be a granary. We now know that Wheeler was wrong. It was a columned hall. A careful excavator, though at times aggressive, he was keenly aware of the public relations value of an important discovery. He often immersed himself totally in the past during his excavations, a characteristic that could lead him to exaggerate the importance of his finds. Flashes of inspiration, like the Mohenjo-Daro granary, were typical of much of his research. Like Leonard Woolley, he was also a vivid writer and would use even small finds to paint a picture of ancient behavior that appealed to a wide audience. For all its cities and citadels, the ancient Indus civilization was very different from others. There were no palaces or royal sepulchres. Few portraits of Indus people survived, but one well-known sculpture shows an apparently calm man who gives the impression of a priest rather than a powerful ruler. Wheeler and Pigott described a civilization that was distinct from those of Egypt or Mesopotamia. Its cities lay within walls with imposing gateways. At first, they were compact. Then, as their populations grew, suburbs developed outside the walls where archaeologists uncovered barrack-like buildings. Wheeler argued that workers had lived there. But again, later research suggests that they were probably workshops for the manufacture of metal tools and pottery. Those who worked in them likely dwelt in the cities. It should be remembered that Wheeler arrived in India straight from a battlefield, and that he was an expert on Rome, a society in which armies played a leading role. He thought of the Indus city walls as defensive. When he discovered the skeletons of 37 men, women, and children lying in Mohenjo-Daro streets that dated to the closing period of occupation, he immediately jumped to the conclusion that there had been a last-ditch massacre of people defending their homes. But he was just plain wrong. The victims came from different groups in the lower town, not from the citadel, which would have been defended to the last. None of the burials show any sign of violence. Biological anthropologists believe they perished from disease rather than war. In fact, the massive platforms and walls were erected to defend not against invaders, but against unpredictable and sometimes catastrophic Indus River floods. Wheeler never published the full details of his Indus excavations. He wrote a preliminary report and a general book on the Indus civilization for a broader audience. This is one reason why his interpretation of the Indus cities has endured. Today, we know that the Indus civilization flourished in a fertile, if unpredictable, environment, where farming land, grazing grass, and all kinds of resources were scattered over an enormous, diverse landscape. This was a civilization that arose because people and communities needed one another to supply the necessities of life. Apparently, they thrived without conflict. After leaving India in 1948, following its independence, Wheeler spent 5 years as a professor of the Roman provinces at the London Institute he had founded. Then he became administrator of the declining British Academy, revitalizing it. He carefully directed funds to young archaeologists working overseas. To Wheeler, archaeology was a global happening, far wider than Gordon Childe's vision of Europe and the Middle East. In Wheeler's later years, he became a TV celebrity, thanks to his appearances on the BBC's Animal, Vegetable, Mineral program, in which experts identified objects from the past. He also continued to write for the public and to lecture widely, for he believed that archaeologists had to share their work with general audiences. Wheeler may have been a vivid personality, but his brilliant excavations set new standards. He may have been outspoken, but his achievements were enormous. Mortimer Wheeler was an international figure who helped lay the foundations of world prehistory.